My name is Einat Wilf, and this is the We Should All Be Zionists podcast. Each week, I'll be reading one essay from my latest collection of essays book, We Should All Be Zionists, on issues facing the Jewish people and Israelis today: conflict, peace, religion, politics, past, present, and future. At the end, I'll be joined by columnist Blake Flayton for a discussion on the themes of the essay and how they apply to contemporary Israel and Jewish life. You can purchase your own copy of We Should All Be Zionists anywhere you get your books. Thanks for listening. Let's start. An American consulate in East Jerusalem could preserve a two-state solution. Op-ed for The Hill, November 2021. As tensions grow over the Biden administration's decision to reopen the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem, there is a simple solution that, unusual for this conflict, could be a win-win all around. That solution is to reopen an American consulate located deep in East Jerusalem. This would satisfy the goal of reopening the consulate as a means of re-engaging with the Palestinians. It also sends an important message about America's commitment to preserving a two-state solution, including in Jerusalem. And if done well, it might be a solution that the Israeli government could swallow and even embrace. Carving out a solution to the consulate issue and for the conflict in general requires abandoning decades of constructive ambiguity that has proved to be destructive. It is time to inject some constructive specificity into policymaking, such as acknowledging that the American consulate and the consulates of other countries represent de facto embassies to the Palestinians. The problem is that all these countries maintain these consulates in direct contradiction to their professed policy of supporting a two-state solution to the conflict. The U.S. is the only country that could point to consistent policymaking in reopening its consulate in East Jerusalem. The reason is that the other countries with consulates in Jerusalem continue to place their embassies to the State of Israel in Tel Aviv, a wonderful city, but decidedly not Israel's capital. By maintaining their embassies in Tel Aviv, these countries refuse to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. They maintain the fiction that Jerusalem forms a separate body, a corpus separatum, under no one's sovereignty as proposed by the United Nations General Assembly in its 1947 partition proposal. Yet these countries pursue an entirely incoherent foreign policy. They profess to support a two-state solution. They call East Jerusalem occupied Palestinian territory. Some of them, such as Sweden, even bilaterally recognized Palestine as an already existing state. But if the eastern part of Jerusalem is Palestinian, then surely the western part, which no one contests and is home to no holy sites, is Israeli. To have any coherence in pursuit of a two-state solution, the policy of foreign countries toward Jerusalem should be determined either by the 1947 proposal or by 1967, the Green Line. If it is 1947, neither Israelis nor Palestinians have any claim to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is then not Israel's capital to these countries, but also no part of it is occupied Palestinian territory. It means that no country should have consulates, representations, or de facto embassies anywhere in Jerusalem. If the 1949 ceasefire guides policy, then the western part is recognized as Israel's capital and all embassies should be moved there, and the eastern part as occupied Palestinian territory and de facto embassies to Palestine could be stationed there. What makes no sense is the policy pursued by most countries, whereby Israel is judged by 1947 and Palestinians by 1967. Most countries deny recognition of Israel's capital in any part of Jerusalem, but they effectively recognize Palestinian claims to the eastern part by positioning de facto embassies to Palestine in Jerusalem. Only the U.S. could claim to pursue a coherent policy in Jerusalem if it reopens the consulate, given that it has recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital and placed its embassy there. The only caveat, and it is a big one, is that the U.S. should absolutely not reopen the consulate in its old Agron Road location, well within West Jerusalem. Reopening a de facto American embassy to Palestine in Western Jerusalem would send a terrible message that this part of Jerusalem is somehow contested. That is a view held only by those who want the state of Israel to disappear. No Israeli government on the left or the right could consent to such an act. No one truly seeking peace would knowingly pursue it. In recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the Trump administration made it clear that this does not mean recognizing the municipal boundaries of Jerusalem and that the final borders of Jerusalem are to be negotiated in a conflict-ending agreement. All genuine supporters of two states understand that a large part of the territory that is East Jerusalem today would be part of the state of Palestine, would it form its capital. East Jerusalem is a vast territory that consists of approximately 70 square miles of Arab villages annexed to the city in 1968 to surround and buffer the emotionally, historically, and religiously significant 1 square mile of the old city of Jerusalem and its immediate environs. The Jewish people, whether in Israel or around the world, have no emotional connection to the Arab villages that have become East Jerusalem through this massive annexation. By opening a consulate deep in East Jerusalem in one of the Arab villages that are now city neighborhoods, the U.S. could make a serious, thoughtful contribution to delineating the contours of a two-state solution. It would make it clear that specific borders should be negotiated and that Palestine should have a capital in the Arab neighborhoods that are within Jerusalem's municipal borders. Of course, the deeper in East Jerusalem the location, the more palatable it would be to the Israeli government. And the U.S. could make this even more agreeable to the Israeli government by calling on other countries to move their embassies from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Reopening the consulate at Agron would undermine these goals. It would bring into question the U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, because what kind of country opens a de facto embassy to another country in the middle of one country's capital? It would undermine any notion that future borders should be negotiated, because if even non-holy pre-1967 West Jerusalem is contested, then the issue is not borders, but Israel's very existence. It is a rare thing that in matters involving Jerusalem and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there is a solution that could work for all. Reopening the U.S. consulate deep in East Jerusalem meets the American goal of re-engaging with the Palestinians and reinforces the contours of the two-state solution. It affords the Israeli government a win by moving the American consulate from its previous location in West Jerusalem to the east, and calling on other countries to follow suit by moving their embassies to Jerusalem. Most importantly, it allows the U.S. to demonstrate policy leadership by highlighting consistent, logical foreign policy in Jerusalem that truly promotes a two-state solution. Such opportunities for foreign policy making in the pursuit of peace do not come along often.
And Nat, before we get into a broader conversation, I want just to make something clear, and that is the distinction between a consulate and an embassy, mm-hmm. and also why there was an American consulate for the Palestinians in West Jerusalem at all. So I'm wondering if you could provide some more detail.
So in the partition plan of the United Nations in 1947, the map essentially consists of three areas for the Jewish state, three areas for the Arab state, and Jerusalem, including Beit Lechem, was actually part of a much bigger area that was called a separate area, a corpus separatum. The idea that this would be governed by the international community, not to Jewish nor Arab sovereignty. This Jerusalem never existed. Because the Arabs waged a completely unnecessary war to prevent partition, because they cared more about no Jewish state rather than having a state for themselves, that map never happened, never existed. And what happened is by the time that the war ended with the ceasefire, rather than as it should have with peace, what happened is that there were the areas that became the Jewish state, the sovereign territory of the state of Israel, and they now included the Western non-holy Jewish neighborhoods of Jerusalem, and Jordan essentially came to occupy and ultimately annex the holy sites of Jerusalem and Beit Lechem and turn them into Jordanian territory. Now, in those areas that were supposed to be the independent international Jerusalem, there were even historical consulates that were created by great powers during the 19th century. And they were kind of ways for those countries to have representation there. And after 1967, when Jordan again engaged in an unnecessary war, which Israel desperately tried to prevent Jordan from entering, but King Hussein was too enamored by Nasser, and he entered that war and lost the entire West Bank, including Beit Lechem, including East Jerusalem, now including the holy sites, and those came under Israeli control. And with respect to the holy sites of East Jerusalem, plus various Arab villages, those Israel annexed. It didn't annex most of the West Bank. It maintained it through a military occupation, but it annexed those territories, creating new municipal boundaries for a massive, large Jerusalem, which I detest, having grown up there. And basically, suddenly those consulates became consulates to the Arabs of the West Bank, increasingly known as the Palestinians. And with the greater and greater recognition of the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, then with Oslo, with the establishment of a Palestinian authority, those began to become de facto embassies to the emergent state of Palestine.
Even if they were in West Jerusalem.
Precisely, yes.
Wow. I didn't even know that. I don't think many of our listeners would know that there was an American de facto embassy to the Palestinians in West Jerusalem.
Yep.
Crazy. I wanted to read this piece today because the Israeli municipal elections happened this week. And we take one look at how Jerusalem voted. And it's a little bit concerning to see what happened there. And I want to tether this to the issue I have with Israelis and supporters of Israel around the world saying that Jerusalem is the undivided, eternal capital of Israel. Now, of course, as we've established, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It should be the capital of Israel. Like you, I cringe every time someone on the news says, oh, reports are coming out of Tel Aviv. It's like, I live in Tel Aviv. I love Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is not the capital. And it feels vindictive when people say that. But at the same time, it irks me just as much when people say the eternal undivided capital of Israel, because you just have to go to Jerusalem to see that it is not undivided. Or just look at the election results, where you have 40% of the city that is annexed by Israel, that is included in Israel's capital, that has no political representation. Yes, because they choose not to vote. But also, it's very hard to square morally how that outcome looks when there's a dividing line between who is represented in the municipal government and who is not, based on entirely ethnicity. That leads people to say things like Jerusalem is an apartheid city because all of this is under Israeli control, and yet one half of it isn't really Israeli, and that's based on who your mother was. What would you say to that critique? of Jerusalem, I guess, or that contention about Jerusalem, and also to the point that the other side of the wall, or there's no wall separating East and West Jerusalem, but now West Jerusalem is dominated in municipal politics by the Haredim, by the ultra-Orthodox, who are very intent on chipping away at the rights and freedoms of secular or reform conservative, even modern Orthodox people in the city. It creates this impossible situation. And some might even say that it could be a microcosm for Israel itself, with East Jerusalem representing the West Bank and West Jerusalem, now under Haredi control, representing the ever-growing population of ultra-Orthodox Israelis.
That is certainly my nightmare scenario for Israel. It's one of the very first op-eds I wrote more than 20 years ago, as Jerusalem is kind of the nightmare scenario for Israel, precisely because you and me, I mean, every time that I grew up in Jerusalem, when I grew up in the kind of the 80s, there was a joke, Olmert was then the mayor. There was this sad joke that Olmert finally realized Teddy Kollek's, the previous mayor, vision for uniting Jerusalem, because now the western part looks like the eastern part. Okay. But yes, there, if Israel had just taken the 6 square miles, which was the Jordanian occupied, annexed East Jerusalem, basically taking the holy city and the few holy sites around it, that would have been completely logical and would have, and I think that would have indeed been correct to call it united, undivided Jerusalem. But the fact that 70 square kilometers of Arab villages that were never Jerusalem now suddenly were brought into this massive municipal boundaries and called United Jerusalem. Well, like you said, I live that lie. We don't go to the Arab neighborhoods. They lead separate lives. They do have the right to vote. In that sense, Jerusalem as a municipality is one where all its inhabitants have the right to vote. And here the interesting question is, why don't the Arabs of East Jerusalem vote? Because that goes, again, to the deeper issue of the complete non-recognition and rejection of the legitimacy of Israeli control. So it's not about having equal rights. It's about, you know, when people say, if there's not going to be 2 states, there's going to be 1 state. And I always have to explain, it's not about giving equal rights, the right to vote. Jerusalem is actually an excellent example where all its inhabitants, Jewish and Arab, have the equal right to vote in the municipal elections. And they don't, because voting would be essentially acceptance, recognition that the Jewish presence there is somehow legitimate. So it's never been about equal voting or 1 state. It's always been about the illegitimacy of the Jewish presence. But, you know, in the 1990s, Netanyahu won his first election, not least on the strength of this motto that Shimon Peres will divide Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I wish, like, please, in the sense, because again, having grown up in Jerusalem, I lived the lie between the soaring rhetoric of undivided Jerusalem and the reality of a very divided Jerusalem. And again, I think there's complete legitimacy for Israel to be in control of the 1.6 square kilometers that are the old, ancient holy sites. But all those Arab villages, they don't belong. And I continue to advocate for them not belonging. And hopefully on the day that the Arabs continue, the Arabs end their century-long war against Zionism, then yes, that will be part of an Arab state that lives in peace with a Jewish state and comes to terms with the equal existence of a sovereign Jewish state on the land.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, it made me think that perhaps Jerusalem is a microcosm for the worst case scenario in more ways than one, because in a way you have this pseudo binational project where both sides of the city can vote, have the right to vote, and one side refuses to participate at all because that would be legitimizing Jewish presence. And so it's sort of a microcosm for the binational solution where even if everyone was given equal rights in the whole country between the river and the sea, this still wouldn't work. There would still be this constant tug of war. There would still be these unfulfilled aspirations, and there would still be violence, as we see in Jerusalem, quite a lot in East Jerusalem and the environs around the old city. We see violence. My last question, going on how you just ended and the points you brought up. I was not alive, but I remember watching videos of seeing Netanyahu, you know, on the balcony of, you know, the night that Rabin was assassinated, and saying, we will never allow Jerusalem to be divided. And that, you know, elicits this roar of applause from the audience. And I'm thinking in the future, there is no way that a significant enough amount of Jews within Israel are going to react positively to, let's say, the Biden administration opening a consulate for the Palestinians in East Jerusalem, regardless of how east and deep within East Jerusalem that consulate is, because Jerusalem has this symbolic, very idealized, lionized, no pun intended, place in the hearts of many Jews, whether they be national or religious or not. It's Zion, you know? And I think to myself, oh my God, if we actually went through with this very logical, very positive policy of dividing Jerusalem and giving the Palestinians that wink that we are support if you choose to live next to the Jews, sovereign Jews, this country is going to tear itself apart like it did during Oslo. It doesn't even need to be all of the West Bank. It just needs to be Jerusalem because of the imagined Jerusalem. What do you say to that? How is it even possible to be putting these ideas on paper when we know we have historical precedent that a certain portion of Israeli society would explode even at the hint of going through with it?
Which is why we need to stop calling it Jerusalem, because it's not. One of the things that I often, like when I tell people, and also about what Barak offered in 2000, is yes, when people hear the word Jerusalem, the images that immediately come to mind is what I fondly call insanity central, right? The Temple Mount, the Wailing Wall, the churches. That's what people think of as Jerusalem. But that's one square kilometer. And Jerusalem in its massive post-1968 municipal boundaries is 100 square kilometers. It's 100 times that. Mostly dull and dreary neighborhoods, such as the one that I grew up in. That 99% should not elicit any emotions. And we need to start either calling it municipal Jerusalem or, I don't know, suburban, but it's not Jerusalem. Yes, I acknowledge the one square kilometer elicits emotion, but we undermine our own ability to come up with logical policies when we kind of use the emotional tag of Jerusalem for this monstrosity of 100 square kilometers, which is really not Jerusalem.
But what you're saying is, just to be clear, that if this policy went forward and that we did divide Jerusalem, Israel would still hold on to the old city. But these environs, these neighborhoods outside of it, which are considered a part of a quote unquote united Jerusalem, we need to disconnect that completely. And also at the same time, disconnect the holiness and sacredness of Jerusalem as a whole.
Precisely.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll get a lot of comments on that one. I'm excited to read them. Thank you, Einat, for the conversation.
Thank you.
תמיד שפלמח מקודש של חבר יחרב את ה... בלב מה שהוא מתעורר,
מה שהוא מתעורר.